You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good day and welcome to another episode of Business Day Spotlight. My name is Lukanyo Mnyanda, editor of Business Day. Here with me in the studio is Siseko Njobeni, our industrial writer. And then next to him, I've got Sunita Menon, our economics writer. So today we are discussing the economy. And it's been quite a busy week and on that front this week, even though there's also been quite a few big political stories, of course, like the ANC list that came out yesterday. But I think, should I start with you, Siseko? You know, in terms of the construction industry that you cover, that's always mostly been seen, or in the past anyway, together with mining and maybe agriculture, they've always been seen as sort of a bit of a bellwether for what's been happening in the economy. Mm-hmm. And so one of the big news this week, obviously, has been the demise of Group 5, one of the most iconic, one of the most symbolic sort of stocks in the history of the JSE. What does that story tell us about the wider economy?
Yes, Lukanya, it's true that the construction sector is one of those areas in the South African economy that are generally very strong. And I think the state of the economy, the way that the economy has performed, shows itself in how some of the companies in the sector have lost a lot of their value. When the news of Group 5 came out, it did not really come out as a surprise, complete surprise, because generally the sector is down. It's been down for the past 10 years. And that is a factor to an extent of the state of the economy, because if the economy is not growing, the construction activity slumps as well.
Mm. Obviously, you don't want to give the companies too much of a get out of jail, but they've also made decisions that were not maybe wise. I mean, this is not obviously the only one. Can you name a couple of companies that we have seen struggle that were normally seen to be quite strong?
Of course. The state that the sector is in, it doesn't come down to one thing. The state of the economy is one, but also the companies themselves, some of the decisions that they've taken, and the agility, you know, to respond to the state of the economy. In some cases, that has been questionable. You know, for instance, Group 5, only in 2018, the company is talking about restructuring its businesses. Obviously, that's in response to the state of the economy, but the sector has been in decline for 10 years. Now, the question that one must ask is, why has it taken the company so long for it to see that there is a need to restructure its own operations, but also to get out completely out of a sector such as construction, for instance? Now you've got to ask yourself, were they prepared? Is this a sector that was prepared for the bad times? And I think in that area, it's been found wanting. There are very few companies. One of them is WBHO that took strategic decisions early on. Well, it's ironic that in their results, WPHO actually got banned in Australia, but I think they need to get credit. They took strategic decisions early on, and I think those put them in good stead compared to their competitors.
Mm. I mean, I think today in a related sector, which is a property sector, and I think Growthpoint, one of the major companies, reporting that rentals are quite weak. People are not willing to commit, and their CEO, like Norbert Sussman, saying there's zero confidence in the SA economy. So, Sunita, I'll turn to you. Is there a light at the end of the tunnel?
The business confidence figures that were out earlier this week show that confidence is at the lowest level in 2 years. So the last time we saw figures like this, Jacob Zuma had just fired Pravin Gordhan, and that triggered a host of downgrades. I think there's a lot of political and policy uncertainty in the lead up to the election, and the growth figures for this year are definitely going to be below 2%.
And we haven't had growth above 2% for about 5 years?
Last 5 years, we haven't seen growth of 5%, which is what we would need to make a dent in unemployment, which is reaching 30%. Since 2008, which is before the global financial crisis.
No, Senator, I remember, in March now, so around about last year, about February. I mean, Ramaphosa, new president, and he said we're going to have growth of 3%. So we're not going to get anywhere near that, are we?
I mean, 2018, we saw growth of 0.8%, which is less than a third of what he anticipated initially. And in recent weeks, he's targeted 5% growth, which seems unlikely. The medium-term forecasts at best show that we'll have 2.1% growth in 2021.
Siseko, just to turn back to you again, I mean, you obviously don't only just cover construction, but you cover a lot of manufacturing, industrial companies. In a way, you are probably one of the best people to speak to in terms of what you're seeing in terms of the results, in terms of the outlook from these companies. Do they see a light in the tunnel, or is it just all gloom?
Most of the companies that have released results so far see the coming year. In most of them, it's the second half of the financial year. They see that the subdued consumer spend is likely to persist for the rest of the year. And those that rely on infrastructure, they don't see an uptick in infrastructure spend until at least after the elections, because they don't foresee that government is going to commit on projects prior to the elections. So what I've observed is that, especially those companies that are producers, food producers and so on, the subdued nature of the consumer spend has come out a lot in the results, and that is to be expected. And very few of them actually are quite positive about the rest of the year.
Sunita Laguna, I wasn't going to bring this one up. I wasn't actually planning to bring up the Reserve Bank. But listening to what Siseko has said and seeing what retail companies have said, obviously we've discussed the construction sector. I mean, it doesn't look like this is an economy that's firing in all cylinders, right? It doesn't look like there's much demand out there. How do you think the Reserve Bank should respond?
Well, I think inflation has definitely eased in the last couple of months. We're below 4.5%, which is the medium target point which the bank prefers to have inflation anchored at. But I think there's still risks to the rand. There's still oil prices are rising. I mean, we've just seen another petrol price hike after 2 months of a reprieve. So I think it's quite a difficult balancing act, and the Reserve Bank has played it quite safe in the past. Mm. I don't think that they're going to make a move anytime soon, but I think it's an economy that would definitely benefit from an interest rate cut.
No, Siseko, like, do you want to add to that?
Yes, just on that, just on the bank playing safe. You know, one of the people that I talked to, in fact, a few of them that I've spoken to, they've been vocal about the extent to which the level of interest rates affect spend, especially in the construction sector, because relatively high interest rates make the cost of capital expensive. And they feel that that has also contributed in keeping this sector depressed. Mm. And they feel that it's time, because the inflation has been within the targeted range for a while. They feel that it's time for the bank to be bolder. Obviously, they are looking at it from an infrastructure spending point of view to stimulate investment.
Also, Sunita, like, I mean, you mentioned the concerns about the rand and petrol prices going higher. And obviously, we've just had this Eskom tariff increase, which is way above inflation. Obviously, that's the Reserve Bank always talks about, administered prices. How do people, economists, do they agree with the Reserve Bank's reasoning? Because also an argument can be made that these things are actually an extra tax on the consumer. So in a way, they depress demand in the economy. So like it sounds almost counterintuitive to actually be saying we should keep rates tight because Eskom prices have increased 13%, when actually that actually depresses the consumer spending even more. So you actually...
I mean, consumers have come under immense strain in the last few years. Last year was a particularly difficult year with the VAT increase, multiple fuel price increases. So a lot of economists argued that in November, the Reserve Bank actually jumped the gun by increasing interest rates. And that was the first increase we'd seen in 2 years. Since then, the inflation outlook has eased quite a bit. So it still begs the question, was it the right move? And is there a possibility for them to reverse it? Which I don't think they're going to do anytime soon. I think we're likely to see interest rates on hold for much of this year.
Yeah. It would be quite a miss for me to have our economics writer here and not ask about one of the things that's occupying people's minds, which obviously is the ratings issue. We've got movies coming up with a review like end of the month, and you've confirmed that a downgrade is a possibility. What is the feeling out there?
So Moody's is set to make their next announcement on the 29th of March. They've been the kind of the rating agencies. We're still at investment grade with them. And they've actually skipped the last two ratings announcement that they were meant to make. The feeling out there is that they're going to change our outlook from stable to negative. And what that generally implies that a downgrade is inevitable within 18 months of that. So while we won't see a downgrade at the end of this month, we're definitely seeing a change in our outlook. And it's a bit of a warning sign for Moody's to actually get our act in order.
Can you tell our listeners, because sometimes these things can feel a bit academic and theoretical, what would be the implications for the country and the person in the street if there was a downgrade?
So first of all, another downgrade means that we are ejected from one of our bond indices, which pushes the cost of borrowing up. So not only does that push the cost of borrowing up for government, but that also pushes up costs for consumers as the rand sort of grapples with it and investment starts flowing out of South Africa.
Thank you for that. And also, like one of your stories today was about mining. We got some mining numbers came out today. Do they fit in with this picture, or how do they fit into all of this?
I mean, after quite a difficult year for mining last year, we've seen the slump continue into January this year. So the mining figures fell again, which was expected, but the sector's been hard hit not only by load shedding, but by prolonged strikes. And the slower global economy has also taken quite a strain on the sector.
Circle, yeah. So, talking about the load shedding, in terms of your companies, how big a concern is that the lack of or the unreliable source of supply in terms of like electricity and also the cost? I mean, we've spoken now about administered prices from an interest rate perspective.
Yes, a number of the companies, especially the producers, the food producers, they've flagged the risk of unreliable power supply, but also the issue of the electricity cost, because that has an impact on their costs, input costs. And this is an issue that adds to the cocktail of negative factors that affect their results. And in that, you'd add, you know, the sugar tax, you'd add the VAT, and just the general slump in consumer confidence. So if you add all of that, you know, then you've got unreliable power supply, then you end up with a number of these companies being very, very pessimistic about their prospects for the rest of the year.
Mm. Sunita, just before we end, I mean, we've fully depressed our readers now. Let's say something positive. What good can you look forward to?
I think the election is definitely going to be a turning point, and I think post-May, we're going to see the ANC hopefully make some meaningful progress. And with that, a lot of economists expect policy certainty and political certainty to pick up. And with that, the economy picks up. So, yeah, it's a very important election. And hopefully after that, we'll have a little more clarity on direction.
In my sector, obviously, construction would lag. It would take a while before we see the benefits come through. But most of these companies at the moment, their financial position is precarious. So a change in sentiment is unlikely to immediately lead to any immediate results. I mean, just for perspective, most of these companies in the past 10 years have lost, a few of them have lost more than 90% of their value. And their order books have fallen significantly. And it would take time for them to see a change, you know, in their operations, a positive change in their operations, even if the sentiment in the country changes. But also, there's the issue of skills. If there's a change in sentiment in the country, if the economy picks up, it's going to take a while before, you know, you can get the skills back. Because I think it's natural that if the sector slumps, it's going to lose skills. So that's another topic, I think, for another day.
You know, I was hoping to end this on a positive note, but Sisako has ruined all of that. Thank you to both of you. Like, it was a very interesting discussion, and it will be quite useful from my perspective as well. Also to see the link now between industry and economy, because sometimes we tend to talk of these things in a very much theoretical and very much hypothetical kind of terms. Thank you for both for bringing it all together for our listeners, and I hope for our listeners it was very useful. See you all next week. Thank you again.